It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 459. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and I have three voicemails for tonight. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. Send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. And, of course, we have the wiki at mtswiki.com. There you'll find links to all of the past shows and the audio and the show notes. That's a great resource to go back all the way to show one. I have, again, a jam-packed show. I have the voicemails that I mentioned. I have some stories for some problems that I ran into this week that I want to share the solutions with you. So if you run into them, you'll have the fix. Couple stories, consulting stories, and then I'll get to the rest of the email. But before we get started, you've heard me talk about Instant House Call, and you know how much I love it for remote support. Now Instant House Call added a killer new feature that you won't find in any other remote support tool on the planet. Are you ready for this? Automatic PC repair. Instant House Call's auto PC repair lets you fix your customer's computer automatically in a remote support session. It has over 100 built-in fixes for removing malware, fixing Windows, you name it. It makes life so much easier. You can run automatic repairs individually or in a batch. You can even right-click a file in Explorer and Google opens up on the technician's computer with details. Here's how it works. You start a remote support session, and while you're controlling your customer's computer, choose Auto PC Repair. Instant House Call will create a restore point and automatically launch and configure everything. You can see diagnostics. It automatically detects problem areas and highlights them, and you can choose almost any repair you can imagine. Instant House Call is the only remote support tool that offers auto PC repair, and you have to see it to believe it. So start providing remote support now with auto PC to your customers today with Instant House Call, and my listeners, the Mike Tech Show listeners, can get it free for 15 days. Click the link on my website or go to instanthousecall.com and download the free trial if you're doing remote support. This is the missing link that you need to be able to remotely repair your client's computer. You got to check it out. So I want to talk about some problems that my clients ran into this week where I had to find a fix. Not every client that has installed Internet Explorer 10 has ran into this, but I've already had several. Once IE 10 is installed and you are running Outlook 2007 or 2010, you lose the ability to click on hyperlinks in an email message. That is now turned off. And it's IE 10 that has done this to the system. So the first link for tonight is the Microsoft Fixit that allows you to be able to open up links in a message. There's an easy Microsoft fix and you just run it. And I've been fortunate. I just email clients and I tell them to copy it and paste it in IE and then click on the fix, depending on which operating system that you're using. If you're using XP, you use one fix. If you're using Vista or Windows 7, you use the other one. It is very clearly marked on the Microsoft Knowledge Base article. So if you're running into this, we got the fix. This past Patch Tuesday has caused the following. If you have a local USB attached HP 1020 or 1022 series printer, and there might be a couple other models, you can't print to it anymore. When you do, it looks like the job went. It stalls the print spooler, and it won't print the job. So naturally, you think, okay, let's stop the print spooler. Let's delete the print files from the queue in that directory, in the print spooler's directory, and then restart the print spooler, and that fixes the problem. And I have that batch file set on several clients' workstations that kind of regularly run into a problem, and they could just click that and fix their print spooler. Well, this does not fix the problem. When they go to print it, let's say it's a PDF, the spooler stops. There's no explanation for this. So I tried a whole bunch of things. They could print to network printers. They could print to all the other printers. Couldn't print to the local attached printer. So last night, I'm working on this, and I decide to just remove the device out of devices and printers, and I reboot the system, and I do this remotely, and after the reboot, it detects, and you know what? It fixes the problem. So you have to reload the driver. Something has gotten corrupt on the local printer driver, and you got to rip it out, reboot, replace the driver, and that fixes the problem. So beware of that. Ran into an interesting problem that when I tell you this, everybody's going to laugh because it was obvious, but it's not obvious when you're in the middle of this and you're trying to think about it. I have a new client that we started making some changes to their Google apps by adding some generic accounts like info, orders, service, and we want those forwarded to certain people. So the one primary person that is supposed to get these, I've set the forwards to and tested it, and it worked. Well, when he sent a test, he wasn't getting the messages. So I get a voicemail today. I was actually in a meeting, and I couldn't answer the phone. So when I get out of the meeting, I answer the phone, and he's saying, Mike, I sent these test messages to those accounts, and I'm not getting it. And I was like, boy, that's strange because it's all set up. I said, remember, you replied to the test messages that I sent. He says, yeah, I know. He says, something must be going on. And it almost made me think something was going on today with Google Apps. And I'm like, wow. I said, you know, I'm not going to be able to figure this out until I get home and I get on my computer and I log into the accounts. I log into each of the accounts I created. The forwards are all set up perfectly. So now I sit from my mhsconsulting.net email account and I send test messages. And he gets them. I'm like, wow, why is he getting them, but he's not getting the test message he's sending? That's because he's the one who's receiving the forward. If your email is the one that's being forwarded to, it can't forward it back to you. Just all of a sudden, it dawned on me, and I called him, and I said, let's look in your email, and the messages are in his all messages. And they're in the all messages for those accounts. Now, a great question in the chat. And it leads to another question. Jerry asked, why not set up groups instead? You are absolutely right. But info is a group that goes to multiple users. So info is a group. Service is not, because they're going to have a temp user. And instead of giving them an individual account, they want them to use the service email account. So we want that to be an actual user. They also intend to have orders set up that way. So they actually wanted two separate accounts, and I had that conversation with them. Now remember, in Google Apps, in Gmail, a great tip, if you want to forward to multiple people, you need to create a group within your domain settings. So you got to be a super admin on the Google Apps account, and you forward that. And what you do is you forward it to the group. To set up forwarding to a group or to actually any email, there is a basically a verification message that's sent with a code to that group. So you got to log in to one of the email accounts of that group, get the verification code, go back to where you want that forwarding to the group, and then enter that code and you'll be allowed to forward. So it's an extra step you got to go through, but it's well worth it. If you want to forward to multiple accounts, you have to create a group. An interesting discussion on what to do with your electronic device if you drop it in water and it gets submersed. An example, my Kindle was dropped in the back of a toilet. I know. I had to lift it up because it was running. The little thing was up. And my Kindle was there. And I can't believe it. It just went zoom, right into the toilet. Now, you know, Amazon and Kindle, you know, they replaced it. No questions asked. That is awesome. Amazon is just phenomenal. Their customer service. Remember to use my link, amazon.mikenation.net, for all your Amazon purchases. There's just no better customer service. The point, if you ever have something dropped in water, there's a rice solution that has now been tested for the Galaxy S4, where you got to take the battery off. Now, you can't do that with an iPhone. You can't do that with a Kindle. But you have to put it in a sealed bag of rice to absorb all that moisture. And you seal it and you let it sit for 24 hours. Now, there's no guarantee that it's going to work, but you know what? You have nothing to lose. It's almost like putting the hard drive in a freezer. Yes, that's not an old wives' tale. I know someone that got one more boot out of their hard drive by freezing it. If you're at the point where there's nothing left to try, but here's the tip. Do not turn on your device and immediately, if there's a removable battery, remove the battery. Do not turn it on. Put it in a sealed bag of rice, let it sit for 24 hours, and then you cross your fingers, you put the battery back in, and you hope that all is well. You have nothing to lose. So just a tip I wanted to pass along. And it was funny, I wanted to mention this because I heard my son Ryan reading that the Galaxy S4 just passed the rice test. They submerged it in water and then pulled it out, took the battery out, and put it into a bag with rice, and it fixed it. Three utilities recommended by Corey. Give a listen.
Hi, Mike. This is Corey Knott from Port Jervis, New York. I am sending you this link to a program called RightLoad. RightLoad lets you add FTP sites to your context menu so that you can just right-click a file and upload it to your site. It's really nice. Another great portable program for you. This program is called Windows 7 Taskbar Pinner. This program lets you pin folders to the taskbar, kind of like in the Mac, how the dock has your apps and downloads, so you could pin your downloads folder or my documents or my pictures. Give it a try. It's great. I've used it all week, and I did it for a couple of customers, put documents on the taskbar. Program I found this week called Reboot Restore RX. It is free. It is like the old Microsoft Steady State. It works on Windows 7, Windows 8, 32, and 64-bit. I've used it now for a couple of clients this week that keep getting infected. And you can even tell it to ignore certain folders, so like my pictures, my documents, my music, etc. Favorites, works great. Give it a try. Great podcast. Keep up the show. I listen every week. Thanks.
Corey, thank you. He sent that as three separate voicemails, and I spliced them together. So that's why it was just continuous with the three recommendations. So thank you very much for that, Corey. Those links will be in the show notes to check out the utilities that Corey's recommended. Give a listen to this. We're going to need some help with this one.
Hello, Mike. This is Andy. Love your show. Enjoy listening to it every week. Had a question. Had a customer, a client, that requested to disable cutting and pasting on their tablet for their employees, certain employees. It's an odd request, but they want to disable that. There's about a good 200 to 300 users. So I'm thinking group policy will probably be the best way to handle that. And I tried to figure out myself, but could not do it. So wanted to see if you have a guide or if you can guide me through it or you can refer me to a website that will help me accomplish this. I appreciate it. Of course, if you want us to put it on your next show as well, that way other people can learn from it. Okay? Thank you, Mike. Bye.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for the question. I have not worked with a client that has had that many tablets. I've worked with someone that has a couple iPhones, and we've worked the policies where they have to have the 4-digit security code or they can't even use their phone. If you're asking just about group policy, I'll find some links that can help you with group policy, but I can give you some tips. Do not test your group policy on the whole group first. Create a test group. Put your system or your name or, you know, put a test machine or an account in that test group. Then perform your policies that you want to push to that group and execute them. See that they work. Then do that to an entire group that's live in production. That's the best advice I can give you on group policies. Never do it on a live group on the whole population that you want for that group. Do it on an individual. Do it on a test group and create a test group policy. Now, I don't know what tablets you're using. I know that there are some admin utilities for managing large groups of tablets where you want to control individual features and maybe remote wipes and take care of everything that you need in that corporate environment. So this is where I need some help. First, Andy, what tablets are we talking about? Are we talking about a mix of tablets? Are we just talking about the iPad? So which tablet? And then here's the question I'm putting out to everybody. What tools are you using in a corporate environment to manage tablets? There's got to be custom programs out there that you can add to your domain to help you manage those tablets, because I'm not sure group policy alone is going to do it. So if you have some recommendations that we can talk about, record a voicemail message, leave me a voicemail, send me an email, whatever it takes, get that to me. I'll pass it on to Andy, and then I'll share it with everybody in a future show. It's the last voicemail.
Hey, Mike, this is Dwayne calling from Canada again, calling about show being released on May 9th again. Calling about people wanting to get an alternative to losing the start menu in Windows 8. I say just let the start menu go and use a better alternative, which is Launchy. Launchy, available at launchy.net. It's free, but you can donate if possible to support this project. It's a great, great program. It allows you to hit a shortcut on your keyboard. And once you hit the shortcut on your keyboard, it allows you to just type in the name in a box that appears. Once you do that, it will bring up the programs in the list and you just hit enter. You got the program open. Actually, since Launchy came out, I barely ever use the start menu anymore, ever since Windows XP. So it's that great. It's a great alternative. So, and it works in Windows 8, no problem. So definitely look into Launchy, available at launchy.net as a replacement. It's free. You should donate, though, because the project is great and needs our support. That's it. Definitely look into that program. Thanks. Love the show again.
Hey, thank you for reminding everybody about Launchy. I've used it a long time ago with XP. And then when I went to Windows 7, I abandoned it. And interesting, I think it's Kate that recommended Launchy a long time ago. I loved it. Great program. And I'm glad for the feedback that it works with Windows 8. That's very nice to know. And nice to have an alternative. And Launchy, very cool programs. Almost like having Spotlight from your Mac. And that's what, I guess, Launchy reminded me of for all you Mac users out there. Now let's get to some email. First email is from Andreas, and it's titled Confused. Hello, Mike. I started listening to your show about a month ago when I heard one of the guys on the Podnuts Pro podcast mention you. Since then, I have been hooked. I listen to your newer episodes on my iPhone's podcast app and to your older ones online at the wiki. Anyway, what I'm really saying is thanks for such an amazing show, and you have a new loyal listener and supporter in me. Well, thank you very much. Welcome. My question, what type of business proprietorship would you recommend to someone starting a computer repair consulting business from home? I'm so confused with all the options and the way they work. Do I actually need a fictitious name or to file as a corporation or an LLC? What I do know is that I want to be able to advertise for my business and that I want to protect my personal assets from being in danger if I were to get sued or something like that. Can you guide me in the right direction? How did you start out your business and what kind of business is it? Thanks for everything you do. Mine's a little complicated, and what I do recommend, and you nailed it right in your question, if you want to protect your assets, now remember this disclaimer, I am not a CPA, I am not an attorney, but you definitely would want to consider an LLC, limited liability corporation. You do need an attorney to help you get that set up. It's not that expensive, but it's worth going through that if you already have that in mind. Interesting, since you mentioned that, then I always recommend, yes, protect your assets because they can't be attached. Your personal assets cannot be attached in a lawsuit if you screw up, have a problem, and a client sues you. For just starting out, and you're just trying to get going, and you don't know if this is going to take off, or you don't know how long you could be doing this, just to get started, you can start as a sole proprietor. It costs nothing. And you go to irs.gov, you fill out the information, and you get an EIN number, an employer identification number. This is all free. What I recommend is you then get that EIN number, and now you go to a bank and you open up a business bank account. Now, here's why. For a small business, what you want to be able to do is track everything that you're spending on the business. And you want to get a debit card that's just for the business. Because now all of your expenses, everything that you do, you only use it for business. You now have an easy way to go online and download all the transactions from that card for your business. You got your expenses covered. Invoices, you could just use Word. You could just get QuickBooks or something and easily set up to do your invoicing and get that all set up. And you can do this as a sole proprietor and also then be able to take advantage of all of the deductions in a Schedule C, where you need a CPA to advise you to do your taxes. You will save a fortune because you'll be able to write off part of your house expenses, and they can help you through that. You can write off your mileage in your car that you use to go to clients, tolls, parking, everything you buy for computers could be used as an expense towards your business, and that can go either way, whether you're a sole proprietor or an LLC. But since you put it out there, I would absolutely get an LLC. And someone in the chat just said it only cost them $135 to file. There are services out there. Take a look at your local area for services that advertise that can help you get your LLC. And then I also recommend getting an accountant, getting a good CPA that comes highly recommended from maybe somebody in the family or friends that they know that they can help with the small business taxes. And then you're set. Once you get your LLC and you get that EIN number, you get your bank account set up, away you go. Now just spend time getting clients. It's more important to get clients than anything else. While you're doing this, work on getting clients. Now, it's interesting that you said you want to advertise. I want you to follow up with me on what you intend to do for advertising and what you find as getting a good result on the money that you've spent for that advertising. Because I'll tell you what, I find very little return on the money spent for advertising. Or at least, here's the thing. What client do you want? Remember that. Because if you're advertising to homes and you're they're going to beat you up for the lowest possible price to do work for repair, and it could drive you crazy, and you may not make the money that you were hoping to make. and you're not going to attract the business that you want. If you want businesses, you got to go after businesses and you got to play on their field and where they're playing at to attract them. Keep that in mind wherever your target audience, you know, if you put an ad on a billboard, on a little board at a grocery store, think of the people coming by. That's who you're going to get. Is that who you want as clients? If it is, go right ahead. If it's small businesses, that's not what you want to do. Make sure that you're targeting the right advertising to the right demographics, to the right businesses, or to the people that you want. I don't advertise on Craigslist. I don't want to. That's not where businesses are going to go to find me. I go to business networking meetings to find other businesses. I belong to BNI, or I'll go to business card exchanges or local networking meetings for like small businesses that are looking to share information on the products and services that they have to offer, possibly chambers of commerce meetings, although I find them not panning out like that the way they should. So just keep that in mind. And Andreas, thank you for the email, and follow up with me. I want to know how you're making out, what decisions you've made for, you know, did you get your LLC? Let me know what you're doing for advertising and what are you seeing for feedback from that. This is an email from Patrick Boyle, and it's IOBits uninstaller. Hi, Mike. Thanks for bringing up Kate's junkware concerns and the junkware removers. I did not know about them either. However, you may want to take another look at suggesting IOBits products. And the title of this article, although it's a few years old, it's IOBit Steals Malwarebytes Intellectual Property. And it's Malwarebytes' response to IOBits uninstaller and what they do in using where they stole the Malwarebytes database and incorporated it into their product. And I received a bunch of tweets about this. So I'm actually going to pull, until I get further information, I'm going to pull the link to IOBit uninstaller. And I am not going to recommend that based just on some of the feedback that I've gotten. We don't like that if that's happening. And we definitely want to protect the intellectual property of great products like Malwarebytes and Malwarebytes Pro. We want to definitely support that. So, Patrick, thank you for bringing that out. And I am going to link the article that he gave me the link to in this email about that. So, thank you. This is from Kate. How to know if a website is safe? Hi, Mike. In all the excitement about finding tools that will get rid of conduit, I forgot to follow up with you on a question from several shows ago. How can we tell if a website is safe if Woot doesn't know? I found a couple of really good resources that I've started to use. One place to check is at the Google Advisory website. You can find out there whether Google thinks the site is safe, whether it's been hosting malicious software, and so on. The downside is that you have to type in, and it's a very long URL, every time you want to query it. Seriously, I don't think most normal humans are going to do that, but it does work. An easier and more comprehensive way is to go to the Online Link Scan website, and that's onlinelinkscan.com. Type in the URL of the site you want to check, and you will get results from half a dozen sites, including Google Safe Browsing, FishTank, and SpyEye Tracker. A problem is that the Online Link Scan site itself is heavily populated with ads to download things. If you could teach people to stay away from that and just deal with the results, it's a good resource. Of course, if you could teach people that, we would both have a lot more free time. Therefore, I advise being a little cautious about telling regular users to check things out. Helpful for the skeptical technicians in your audience, though. Thanks, Kate. Kate, thank you. And you are right. I'm probably not going to send you my my clients to a site like that because they're just going to get reinfected. They're going to click and download all kinds of junk, although that keeps us employed. But I really don't enjoy spending my time cleaning computers like that of infections. The one time, yes, and I try to make it where there's no repeat. And, you know, we're going to talk about that in a second. The last email, and then I have a consulting story. This is from Peter. Hi, Mike. You mentioned that you may have to reset a router to its default password last night. Take a look at these two sites. And one is routerpasswords.com, and the other one is securityexplode.com/download.php. It's a router password cracker. Thank you, Peter. And I've actually started looking into this because I need to get into a router, the admin. It's not the default password, and I cannot reset it to the factory defaults. That's not an option at this time. So I'm trying to get into the router, and I'm trying to use every method possible. So, Peter, thank you very much. Now, for my consulting story, this week I was called to a regular client that her machine, she described it as all of the icons blinking constantly and could not click on anything. I said, power off the computer, hold in the power button, shut it down. I will come out. So I came out the next day and I brought with me my trusty USB stick with all the utilities that we talk about. And here's what I did. Booted in safe mode with combo fix on the disk. Booted in safe mode successfully with networking. Put combo fix, ran it, let it find its thing. It found pages and pages of deleting folders and files. I'm watching this and I'm like, wow, this was really infected. So I see hundreds of things being removed by combo fix. I now boot into regular mode after that was all done. And I run the junkware removal tool that we talked about last week. And it found pages of all kinds of things that it was deleting. It rebooted. And I'm like, we're making progress. And things are snappy and fast. I run the adware remover. Found things. Said delete all. Reboot it. Ran the toolbar remover program. And there were still, if you could believe it, a couple toolbars, got rid of them. Everything looked clean. Ran CCleaner, cleaned up all of the files, the temp files, and lots of the junk, repaired the registry while I was there. Loaded Chrome, and when it came up, it was a black screen, and all, it was very strange looking. It didn't even look like Chrome. And my client was shocked. They were like, wow, they said, that doesn't look like Chrome. And it was infected. Now, oh, something I forgot. Right before I started, I launched Chrome, I put Malwarebytes on with the key and the license for Malwarebytes Pro. Now they have Malwarebytes Pro installed and the database was updated. Now, I didn't run a scan for Malwarebytes Pro, but it was running and it was in the tray. I launched Chrome. And with that, as we were discussing this black screen, Malwarebytes Pro brings up a screen and there are 30 different things that it's quarantining. I mean, I'm glad Malwarebytes Pro, look, it saved us here. So I quickly shut off and closed Chrome, deleted everything in the quarantine that Malwarebytes found. And I had a quick conversation with my client and she basically said she didn't care about, she has no add-ins or no extensions and did not care about any of the history or bookmarks or anything within Chrome. I said, great, great answer. I removed Chrome. I went to the directories in the app data and I removed all remnants of Chrome and the Google folder that contained files and information relating to the profile. I re-downloaded Chrome for her, and it came up just like it should be, nice and clean and pristine. Malwarebytes was happy. But isn't it fascinating, after running every one of those utilities, Chrome was still infected, and I was stunned. That's a first for me, where after running all those utilities, the browser was still infected. It's amazing. And this, by the way, only took an hour. She's now back running very clean. We have Woot running on all of her browsers. We have Microsoft Security Essentials running, and we have Malwarebytes Pro. That is a great combination that I always say, put our clients in the best position possible so as they are on the internet and they're working, that we can keep them safe, keep them protected. That combination, I usually do not have any repeat infections. Keep that in mind. And I used all the utilities that I talked about last week, and they were great. And I've used them several times. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for downloading and listening to the show. I really appreciate it. Please help support the show by not only donations, but, which is very important, and I thank you, my Amazon link. Very important. If you buy anything from Amazon, or you know anybody that purchases from Amazon, use my link. It's real easy. It's amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same. A commission comes back to help support the show. Also, Malwarebytes Pro, great, great product. I'm an affiliate. You can click on the link on the website and make that purchase. You know I love Fabs Auto Backup for Tech. I use that literally almost every day when I'm transferring information from one system to another. But I'll tell you, the killer link tonight, if you are doing remote support, instant house call, with that new Auto PC Complete, where it can run Malwarebytes and everything, it can clean and fix a system, and you can do that remotely. Give that a try. You're going to love it. That's it. I want to thank everybody for downloading and listening to the show. I will be back next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.